പീതാംബരധരം നീലം മാല്യചന്ദനഭൂഷിതം രാധാചിത്തചകൂരേന്ദും സൗന്ദര്യ സുമഹോദധിം പരാത് പരതരം ദേവം ബ്രഹ്മാനന്ദ കൃപാനിധി. ഓം പാർത്ഥായ പ്രതിബോധിതാം ഭഗവതാ നാരായണേന സ്വയം വ്യാസേന ഗ്രഥിതാം പുരാണമുനിനാ മധ്യേ മഹാഭാരതം അദ്വൈതാമൃതവർഷിണീ ഭഗവതീം അഷ്ടാദശാധ്യായിനീം അംബ ത്വാം അനുസന്ദധാമേ ഭഗവദ്ഗീതേ ഭവദ്വേഷിണീ. What is the time frame? It is 7:10. When should I stop?
8:30.
Will they be all alive till then? An hour and 20 minutes?
8:10, 8:15.
Okay. So you have been studying Bhagavad Gita here when I was discussing with Tirthankar and Nandini as to what topic we should take for discussion in the retreat. And then I was told that you have been studying Bhagavad Gita and you have come up to 13 chapter. And so I said, so come on, let us read 14th chapter, so it will maintain the link with what you have been studying. And also it is very good to study Bhagavad Gita because it is a complete scripture for people like us. Being a scripture, it is moksha shastra, that it is meant for liberation. There is no other purpose for it. At least at the primary level, it is a moksha shastra. It is for liberation. What has happened?
The volume, if it is on, volume is not on.
Is it on?
You tell me that how loudly I should speak. That was on, because as soon as I started speaking, I could see the difference.
Yes.
So if people are not able to hear, then I will increase the pitch. But otherwise,
it's fine.
Yes. So what is the idea, what is the meaning of a moksha shastra that which liberates us from the bondage of ignorance? Many times here we feel the bondage, that is universal. Feeling of bondage is universal, but we are not aware that it is result of the ignorance, because somehow or other we feel that we know, and ignorance is not the cause of bondage. After all, how ignorance can bind? Something positive can bind us. Ignorance is not knowing, that's all. So not knowing something cannot positively bind you. Not knowing is something just negative. So how can it have a positive impact like bondage? Can ignorance create a rope and bind us? That is appears to be not the case. But scriptures insist again and again that the ignorance is the cause of bondage, because in your true nature you are free. There is no bondage to you at all. It is hard to believe, especially when we take a look at our present stage of life, how we are living. It appears that from all sides there are so many bondages that are keeping us bound, restricting our freedom in every single direction that we look. When we think of, for example, finances, always we feel we don't have enough. There is the bondage on that side. Then we think of friends, we feel we don't have enough. When we think of the happiness, we think we don't have enough. And we are bound by so many things. We want to do many, but then our will seems to be all bound by the circumstances, by the situation. Left to ourselves, we will have all our desires fulfilled. That is in fact the meaning of desire. They are craving for fulfillment. If we have our way unrestricted, then we would have all our desires fulfilled. But we see we are bound. We cannot really fulfill all our desires. In fact, the bondage comes to such a stage. It becomes so painful and stringent that even a single desire is difficult to fulfill. We see that even a single desire, if we try to fulfill it, we find that there are so many difficulties. They keep on propagating further, and instead of fulfilling that desire itself gets so many new offshoots. So it is, you must have heard that story in this Durga Saptashati. You read a story in some Ramayana versions, you read similar story, that Rakta Bija. Mm-hmm. In context of Ramayana, it is called Ahiravan Mahiravan story. Mm-hmm. That you cannot kill that demon with the normal procedure, that you stab the fellow or shoot with an arrow or cut off head with a sword. Those things don't seem to work, because every drop of that demon that falls on the ground, another exactly similar demon with all powers emerges. So that is really an illustration, an analogy to what happens when we try to fulfill our desires. It is like trying to kill that demon. The more we try, the more such demons spring up. And so it is, we feel that bondage. In Swamiji's book Jnana Yoga, you will see how the bondages again come in on every side because of the contradictory nature of our desires. Our desires, had there been just one desire, I probably had the opportunity to fulfill it and just be done with it. But our desires themselves are contradictory. In the morning, Nandini wants one thing, in the evening, exactly opposite of it. So that is now which desire to fulfill. It is, I am not really exaggerating, friends. You see, If you are in the middle of a big crowd, a lot of friends, lot of people, when you throw a big party at your home, then so many people come, relatives come, other acquaintances come, you welcome them, say hi, how are you, how is your kid and so forth. And then you feel, oh, leave me alone now, I want to be alone. I don't want any of this. Just I am getting so tired of all this. I want to be alone. Do we not get such desire? That I want to be alone. But leave you alone, and then you will pick up the cell phone and start dialing people. You don't want to be left alone. Loneliness is such a big problem. So many people suffer from loneliness. But remove the loneliness by bringing lot of people to them, that also will be very oppressive. We want to be left alone and yet not left alone. Now which desire to fulfill? One desire is running counter to other desire. And that is the fate of all desires that we have. All desires. You go to school to learn, I want to get a PhD or whatever. And then, oh, so much study, so much work, so much, why did I get into it? So, counter to that. You have one desire, the opposite desire is also there. So, therefore, it becomes a bondage that cannot be resolved here. And why is this bondage? Because of that ignorance of our true nature, that we really have everything that we want. There is nothing that is lacking in our true nature. Do we believe this? We don't believe this. That is why we think that if something from outside comes to us, then we will be having that fulfillment. A man thinks that if I am so feeling sense of imperfection, sense of lack, if I get a woman joining me, then there will be all fulfillment. But the experience is not exactly like that, that it is. So the things get all again disturbed. So it is, we think that fulfillment will come by adding something to us. What does it indicate? What does it indicate? We are ignorant of our intrinsic
nature.
Our intrinsic, complete, total, perfect nature. It is, therefore the bondage is because of that. And so, when we have the proper diagnosis, then the medication also gets decided by that. When you are not sure as to which antibiotic to be given, then many times what is done is they culture and then try the antibiotic on that culture. Which antibiotic kills it, then you are given that medication. So the diagnosis, when you have the diagnosis, then the remedy also is more or less now decided. So ignorance is the problem. So what is the remedy?
Yeah.
No brainer, is it? It is clear. The knowledge is the remedy. So that Bhagavad Gita brings this knowledge to us. That is why it is called Advaitamrita Varshinim. That Advaita, that knowledge of non-duality. This non-duality here need not be confused with the three schools of Vedanta, like the school of non-dual reality advocated mainly by Shankara, or Ramanuja's Vishishtadvaita, qualified non-dualism, or Madhvacharya's total dualism. All three are really different varieties of non-dualism. The difference is very minor, really. All three schools consider that God alone is the independent reality. Other things that you say, the difference comes because of the different techniques the teachers have used to explain our existing phenomena that we see. The question naturally springs up that Nandini will ask that if all is one, then why do I see many? Now, in explanation of that, we have these three or many other schools also. So, when Bhagavad Gita, it is referred to as Advaitamrita Varshanim, that Advaita is not one of that Advaita school as such, but they, yes, that one beyond all many, that nature of truth that is being discussed. Welcome Prasanna, welcome Raja Gopal, hey Vithal, namaste, do pranam. Namaste. Very good.
It's okay. Come here. Come.
Vango, vango. So you made it.
Yes,
on
once.
Time. Good.
We try to be on time. So.
Yes, yes. We just began. What you missed was important though. The music. Very nice singing that we had. In explaining the variety, those philosophical differences come up. But the nature of truth is this. One without second, Brahman or Atman, whatever you like to call, or God. When one knows that, then you are immortal. Then there is no death for you. We want to be immortal, we don't want to die. So how can we prevent ourselves from dying? It is not by getting new antibiotics or new replacements that if you are, somebody was asking, telling that now there is the way that you can change many different organs. Like all those plug and play things, if one is gone, you just replace another there. So, if some of our organs, the kidney failure, okay, just get new ones from the shop and plug them in. If heart is not doing properly, get another heart and plug it in there and the things will be fine. If brains, they are not working well, that cannot be done with brains. Get some other and then plug it in. It is so. Then can we become immortal like that? It is still not immortality because change. It is who is immortal? That is the question that remains. So the way that one can really attain to immortality is by knowing that I alone am. There is nothing else. There is no death for me because time also is actually involved in me. I am not in time anymore. There is no change for me. So I am the Nitya. So when you know that I am Nitya, then one is immortal. So, that knowledge is important. And Arjuna was suffering, as we know, that Bhagavad Gita begins with Arjuna's question. She was singing nicely that Lord is ready to give knowledge, but we don't ask for it or seek it or listen to it like Arjuna. So Arjuna was given this knowledge, and at the end of this Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna says, yes, nashto moha smritir labdha tvat prasadan maya achyuta. And we also read Bhagavad Gita many times, but doesn't seem to have much effect. Why so? Because we do not listen like Arjuna. So, this knowledge is really, Arjuna doesn't seek in the beginning. Arjuna didn't understand that he was suffering from ignorance. So he thought that Lord will give some advice so that his present suffering will all be gone. He was suffering because like everybody suffers, but he didn't at that time. In the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, you don't find Arjuna asking any spiritual question at all. Just mundane question of all of us, that we are suffering here. Who is not suffering? Everybody has problems. So, we just want to get over all these sufferings. That is the idea of Arjuna. And he doesn't want any spiritual, religious or such advice. He wants just mundane advice by which the sufferings will go away. And Lord begins like this, but goes deeper and deeper. And as Arjuna starts understanding, his questions, you will see, they become different. Arjuna asks about the path. In the third chapter, you see, that question comes. Before that also, in the second chapter, at the end, Arjuna asks a very spiritually significant question, that tell me the way the person who is established in wisdom lives, the life of a person who is established in wisdom, because I want to see, I want to know what change it brings in life. Arjuna's quest was not just for the theoretical academic understanding of nature of truth, not for getting a PhD in philosophy, that Advaita Vedanta philosophy in postmodern era. And so you get a PhD for it. Life remains just as it was. Arjuna was not interested in that. Only then that fellow gets a tenure in university because gets a PhD. So, and then that thesis gets published. So, but the life remains full of all that suffering. So Arjuna wanted specifically that what change it brings in life. And again also, how should I follow that person? Because following a saintly person can happen at many different levels. So we have to see what needs to be followed. So, that was the question too, like following Sri Ramakrishna. So, just by growing a beard like him, does it mean that we become followers of Sri Ramakrishna? What? No. Are you sure? Okay, good. Because I was not getting a response. So that if you have a... One may have a doubt that, or by just going and living at Dakshineshwar, as Sri Ramakrishna used to live, does it mean following Sri Ramakrishna? What is following Sri Ramakrishna?
His teachings.
Mm. Yes, come on. She says, following his teachings. Any other response, any other...
His ideals.
His ideals. Good. Think, you know, think. Our class means you have to think. It is not just a passive class. You have to be actively involved in it. Learning is a process of active involvement. So think. And you are all very brilliant people. So you should come up with your responses.
Well, imbibing his principle, having that one-pointed devotion.
Oh,
so
good,
the life
good.
Would change.
Yeah, so one-pointed devotion. Come on, further.
Emulating his life.
Huh?
Emulating his life, the way he lived his life.
Yes, means what? What should be? He used to like rasagulla. So eating rasagulla, that will make Prasanna like Sri Ramakrishna. Easy way out. Good.
Tyaga.
Renunciation. Yeah, correct.
Vyakulata,
yearning.
Discrimination.
Viveka, correct. Very good. So we got many important pointers that what is the meaning of following a saintly person, the one who is established in wisdom. So Arjuna asks that question and gets the very beautiful reply that it is the desirelessness in that person that needs to be followed. The answer that was given is yes, so he wants to listen to me, so it is. And that was the different specific differentiation that was shown by Krishna when the question was asked about where is the difference, in what way my life and this illumined person's life differs. The answer was that that person does things like you, but without any desires. Prajahati yada kaman sarvan partha manogatan. So there is not a single desire left in that person of knowledge. Why? Why not a single desire is
completely fulfilled?
Yes, that is, if one is fulfilled, then there is no desire left automatically. If a person is feeling hungry, give food and the person takes. If already full, then even if you offer food, won't go for food anymore. Because there is no need of it, no desire for it. So this fulfillment of this person and eliminates all desires. And yet that elimination of desire has not made that person devoid of happiness. Sometimes we get this impression that if the desires are all removed, I will become an unhappy person, because somehow in ignorance we connect our pleasures, our happiness with the desire. That is how you go to get an ice cream and you get the pleasure of eating ice cream if you have in the beginning the desire to get ice cream. If there is no desire for ice cream, then what will happen, Nitya? You will not get the enjoyment that you would have got out of the ice cream. So if there is no desire, no happiness, the life will it be a life worth living? It appears that because of desires that we get happiness. That is why we feel that the desires are our friends. That is, again, this question comes in third chapter by Arjuna. That question was asked that what makes me live a life that is against the ideal? If I have a goal, If I know that this is my ideal, then automatically all my actions should be such that they will lead me there. Like my ideal today was to come to Cedar Rapids. So all my actions were geared to that. I didn't take a flight that is going to take me to, say, Florida. That would be something anti-ideal. I took the flight that is coming to Cedar Rapids and I got here. Now, if our ideal is God realization, how should our actions be?
Everything oriented.
Oriented to that. Are they? And Arjuna's sincere question, therefore, is why? I want to lead a life dedicated to God realization, and yet something forcibly hijacks my life and puts it on another track. What is it? Hey, kama esha krodha esha rajoguna samudbhavah. That we will see in the 14th chapter discussion. What is this rajoguna? So, kama esha krodha esha. And then he further says that know it to be your enemy, vidhi enam iha vairinam. Had Arjun been already knowing it as an enemy, then this was not necessary to be told. Shankara in commentary therefore says, why is it necessary to be told? Because we consider the desire to be our friend, because it brings pleasure. So desire is our friend, so why give it up? Therefore, ignorance, knowledge will tell us that desire is our enemy. So this person, therefore person of knowledge, has no desires. So we understand that in our life, if we want to follow this path of devotion, then there should be elimination of desires, except one desire, that is God realization. Don't remove that desire, otherwise you may be tempted from starting the removal of desire from this one, that this God realization. Let me remove the difficult desire. So, God realization is so difficult, so let me give up that desire first. So, that desire is not to be removed. Sri Ramakrishna was asked that question many times. What about desire to realize God? And he said, no, that should not be counted amongst desires. It is not desire at all. It has the name of desire, but really it is the delusional name. It is not really a desire. So, this is to be understood that there is no compromise between desire and God realization. This should be clear to us. We are all intelligent, thinking human beings. So, our simple common sense would make it very clear to us that there is no compromise between desires and God realization. So, if you want God realization, what should be done?
Remove
the desires. Tyaga. That is why Sri Ramakrishna used to say that the message of Bhagavad Gita is Tyaga. Tyaga, tagi, 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 tagi. That becomes Gita, Gita, Gita. He used to say, if you repeat the word Gita 10 times, then that is the meaning of Bhagavad Gita. It becomes tagi, tagi, tagi. So, it is tyaga, renunciation is the idea there. And the renunciation, the word sounds a little painful to our ears because of the attachment to the world. Should I give up? Just now? Will it not be after 5 years I can think about it? Maybe tomorrow at least, not today at least, let me enjoy. It is like tomorrow they are all singing, you say. So today it is difficult. That it is aaj nagad kal udhar, you know. That today you pay cash, tomorrow you will get on credit. Businessmen there, they don't want to displease the customers. So, and yet they don't want to give on credit either, because then it is all gone. They have to. So, therefore, they write it like that. Today pay cash, tomorrow you will get on credit. Tomorrow again they see the same board. So, it is basically when we postpone something that cannot be done today because of some reasons which tomorrow will not be there, then there it makes some sense. That suppose my flights were not today, then take the tomorrow, understandable. But if when the same situation is going to be there tomorrow too, then what is the point in saying that not today, tomorrow? That only indicates psychologically that there is no preparedness for it. That we think that desires are our friends. We are not considering them as our enemy. Would you harbor your enemy for today and say that let that enemy be today with me? Tomorrow I will kick the fellow out. Right now, this moment, because the fellow is enemy, if I don't kick that fellow out, he is going to cut my throat. So therefore, right now, so this idea is to be felt by us. It is, then we will be start working on it. You are all working on it, I know. But we strengthen all this by repeated reading. This idea in Bhagavad Gita, it gets explained in many different ways. And the 13th chapter was, yes, it is about the changing and unchanging. What is real and what is unreal? How to know, is there a criterion by which we can judge what is real and what is unreal? The reason for this is that our attachment to the world makes us think, why should I consider this world to be unreal? This is real, only what you can say is that it is not permanent. Things come and go, is it not? It should not be called unreal. It is real. It is all we see. We do so many things. We aspire for so many things. And things happen here. Sometimes they are unpleasant. That is understandable. But you can say that it is impermanent. But you can't say that it is unreal. And that is the 13th chapter's glory, very important thing. That what do you mean by unreal? Try to analyze and you will see that the only criterion that you have really to say that something is unreal is that it is impermanent. Whatever is impermanent is unreal. Try to think of any other criterion. For example, the famous Vedanta example, that rope and snake. You are seeing that there is snake. Is that snake real? When you go and examine it, you see that it was rope. What is your idea then about it? Do you think that the snake was there, real but impermanent. That impermanence was discovered, and as soon as it was discovered, you saw that it is unreal. Your awareness doesn't become like this, that when I was seeing the snake was there, and when I came close with the flashlight, then it went into some hole, and while doing that,
a rope
was kept there. We never think like that, it would be just silly. We know that what we were seeing as snake was, good boy, what we were seeing as snake was actually the rope. So this is very good boy, very observant. So that he is doing his sadhana, you know, let him do. Don't try to stop him. So it is therefore the 13th chapter dwells on this, that learn to separate that which is real from that which is unreal by applying this principle, that see what lasts and what does not last, that which remains and that which does not remain. One very great Swami, he used to be in Nagpur, and he used to tell this very often. He was Mahapurush Maharaj's disciple and a man of tremendous fiery knowledge in him, flashing all the time. So he used to say like this, in half Hindi, half English, half Bengali, that kya rehta hai aur kya jata hai, dekho, kya, what remains, what does not remain, that one has to see. So in the 13th chapter, that Kshetra and Kshetrajna. And that also is important to know, that there we are really connected with God. When we come to that principle Kshetrajna, so Lord says there in the second verse, Kshetrajnam chapi mam vidhi sarva kshetreshu bharata, that Kshetrajnam chapi mam vidhi, that cha there comes, the commentary says, to ward off the other idea that we have. Because what our conviction is, that the Kshetrajna here is Yogatmananda, Kshetrajna here is Rajagopal, and we are different from each other. The Kshetrajna means the one who knows the world. So the one who knows world here is different, there it is different, here it is different, there it is different, in a bird it is different. Therefore see, the bird's understanding and knowledge is different, a dog's knowledge is different. So how can we say that the I in a dog is same as I in Yogatmananda? Is very difficult to believe. So that statement comes as like a big surprise, that the knower in all these is one, and that one is God. That God is in each of us is that which who is knowing every time. Every time when that awareness is flashing, that is God. In every awareness there is flash of this knowledge. That is the last statement, last in the sense, last concluding, where the conclusion is presented in Keno Upanishad. That where is this self? pratibodh viditam matam, that in every flash of awareness, that is flashing, that is making that awareness possible. Whenever you know something, whenever you become aware of something, at whatever level, any level, that sometimes the knowledge comes through the sense organs and you know, if that is the knowledge, even there the knower is God. Sometimes the knowledge does not come through as sense organs. The sense organs at that time are not functional, and yet you have knowledge. For example, when you are dreaming, then these external organs, they are not functional there. And the other inner organs become functional. So they show you those things. So there as well as the knowledge in the external that you get through external senses, or the knowledge of I that you do not get through any sense organ, in any of these, they whatever flash that you get is that divine, that one flash. It is not separate from each other at all. It is the example that is many times given to illustrate is that when sun gets reflected in many water drops, the sun is not different, the water drops are different. So just compare that we are all like these water drops. The I in all of them, although appears to be distinct, yet really it is same. The I here is not traceable really. You see it, but you cannot really get it. You try to find it and you don't get it. Just as the sun in the water, you will not be able to take it out and give me. You will touch only water there. So in this case also, the knower in everyone is the same God, and so therefore there is no distinction at all. That which does not change. So the definition of kshetra is given in the third or fourth verse there, that whatever changes is kshetra, and whosoever is perceiving the change is the kshetrajna, the knower that remains unchanged, that is God. So now after telling this in 13th chapter, Arjuna understands many things, no doubt. He has asked some question also, but Krishna feels that this knowledge needs further reinforcement. This needs to be illustrated more by going deeper as to how these manifestations differ then. Why do they differ? Where do they differ? And also then how should we handle them so that we actually can get to the Kshetrajna or God. So therefore this 14th chapter is beginning to show the nature of differentiation. The differences are there, but who made those differences? And what is the constituents that make the difference? The fundamental constituents of this world that we see. That is one way of understanding that human beings use, analysis. This is called analysis. That we want to go into the depth of the things, so break it. And that is how one comes to, gradually the atoms, then comes to the electrons and all the fundamental particles, and it, that process can continue, can go on. This is analysis. So we want to know the constituents that make this world, and that is what is causing the differentiation. So that is called sattva, raja, tama. We will get to that while studying this. So this chapter begins. Shri Bhagavan Vacha Param Bhuya Pravakshami Jnananam Jnanam Uttamam Yajnatva Munaya Sarve Param Siddhimito Gataha. Yes, somebody read English translation. Would you read? Do you have English translation in that?
The Blessed Lord said, I shall again declare that supreme knowledge, the best of all forms of knowledge, by knowing which all the sages have passed from this world to the highest perfection.
So the introduction, Bhagavad Gita actually can be seen as a lesson in practical psychology. That Arjuna needs to be told things in a way that he will be able to absorb. He will also feel the interest. It is this is how the teacher explains things, looking at the how the student will be able to grasp it. So 13th chapter, when it ended, Arjuna is not in a state of asking any question. Why? Not that he has understood everything.
Overwhelmed.
Exactly. Overwhelmed. Correct. Arjuna is overwhelmed. Many times when we listen to a big discourse full of so many important themes, wonderful points, that at that time that overwhelming impact prevents us from thinking of any question. It is not that everything is understood correctly, but what question to ask, that is also not clear to us. So Lord sees that at this stage Arjuna has plenty of questions, and they are all bottlenecking. So nothing is coming out. Which question, how to begin, that is the problem. So Lord starts again telling. So he says, Param Bhuyaha, Bhuyaha means again. So this thing has already been told, is re-emphasized, retold. Why retold? Because students are like us, who need to be told again and again and again. In Brahma Sutras, there is one aphorism, Avritti Asakrit Upadeshat, means that scriptural teachings have to be given again and again. It has to be repeated. Just telling once is good for somebody like Shukadeva, Sri Ramakrishna, told once, that is fine. He was told by the teacher that Tattvamasi, and correct. the knowledge came. The knowledge came. Again it was not needed to be told, like somebody has moved the glasses here and is looking for the glasses, where did I leave it, asking everybody, and then somebody right on your forehead, that, and then as soon as the fellow hears it and the knowledge there comes instantaneously. Now, does that fellow need to be told again and again? No, once telling is good enough. But that person has to be like that. But otherwise, again and again, the truth needs to be told, because there will be so many funny reactions in us. Books like Vedanta Sara tells that the reception happens at four different levels, depending on the students, that some students understand it, some misunderstand it, some do not have any belief, some do not get it at all, I mean no understanding at all. So there are so many different responses that come, and therefore Lord sees the necessity to bhuyaha, again to be told. That famous story in Chandogya Upanishad about this Tattvamasi, that student comes to the teacher there in that case is his father. And I don't go into the details of the story, very interesting story, but then he is asking about the ultimate principle, and the teacher says, well, you are that. Now, it doesn't fit. Understanding means whatever you know, the incoming information has to mesh with it correctly, synchronize with it correctly. The incoming information and what you know already, they should together make a synthetic whole. So, Shvetaketu, the student there, he gets confused that my knowledge about who am I now, that I was born so many years ago, and I know this, I don't know this, my height is so much, my weight is so much, I like to eat rasagulla and all those things, that knowledge about me. And he is telling that you are Brahman, you are God. Do they synchronize? Absolutely not. It is, you may be able to synchronize this knowledge maybe, that if a mouse is told you are a lion, okay, maybe. But this is much more than that. That a finite human being, how can that be the infinite God? Not possible. So he says, no, I don't understand, please tell me again. And the teachers are very compassionate, you know, they understand our stage, and but yet they do not give up on us. They try again and again, that very compassionate. So the teacher there tells him that, okay, I will try to tell you again. Go and get that big tree there. There was in front of that ashrama, probably there was a huge fig-like tree. The tree was very big, and a fruit was lying, a ripe fruit that was fallen, and that fruit had a shell. So he tells Shvetaketu, please bring that fruit. Okay, now again method of analysis. Come on, break it. And after breaking it, what do you see? Observation. This is all very scientific, you know. Do experiment, observe, think, get to conclusions. What do you see there? Well, I see many smaller seeds there. Okay, take one of them, break, take the process further. What do you see? I see those well, small fine particles. Okay, can you break one of them? What do you see? I see nothing. So he says, look, that which you cannot even see with our eyes, that so small something, that is the cause of this huge and gigantic tree. Do you see that? So similarly, you also are actually having this potential of being God. Remember this, think of this, that you are divine, like that little particle is the tree. Potentially we are all divine. Who said that?
Swamiji.
Good, wow, you read, good. that potential divinity. And he says, now do you understand? He says, a little bit, but still explain it to me again. And the teacher repeats this 9 times there. See how much patience they have. Shvetaketu was a bright student. For a fellow like Yogatmananda, 100 times repetition may not be enough. So, it is, and ultimately he says, okay, Shraddhasva Somya, have faith in this. And you have to work on this. You have to do sadhana. Then you will be able to get this in your brain properly. Your present understanding and that understanding will then synchronize. So, repeatedly they are telling that, and what knowledge this is? You may say that I know many things. I am a scientist and I have studied many things. I know many types of knowledges. I have good knowledge of politics. I am on the top of those things. I also have good knowledge of the economics. I have good knowledge of astronomy. I have good knowledge of medicine. So many good knowledges I have. So do I need to know something more? Already I have a lot of information. But this Lord says, Jnananam Jnanam Uttamam. The highest amongst all these knowledges, this knowledge is supreme knowledge. Is Lord trying to promote his product? Because the promoters of the different ads, when you see, no ad says that our product is inferior. My product is the best one. It is best product. It is. I went to one shop and then something was there that I don't remember what I was going to buy. But I remember the conversation with the shopkeeper there that I asked him, is it good? And he asked me, that have you ever met a shopkeeper who says that his product is not good? So why ask me? You know what I am going to say. So it is Lord also just trying to promote what he is going to give? No. It sounds like that, but no, this is Jnananam Jnanam Uttamam. Why? Because yajnyatva munayas sarve. I am not just praising my product. It is, see the effect. This knowledge, what happens with this knowledge? Yajnyatva munayas sarve param siddhimito gataha. Knowing this, the munayaha, all those who knew this and therefore they were muni. Muni means those whose nature, manana shila iti muni, that they meditate on what they know, try to get the essence of it. And thus, when they learn this thing, what happens to them? Param siddhimito gataha. They know the supreme. They become liberated. They get the ultimate success in life. Param Siddhi. They get the ultimate well, success or fulfillment in life through that Param Siddhi. So, do the other types of knowledge, does it bring it? You can compare that even if you are the physicist of highest order, got Nobel Prize, maybe 3 Nobel Prizes, does it make you the one who has got the Param Siddhi? You don't get Param Siddhi by that. You may get some fame, that's about it. You may get some money, that's about it. You may get some intellectual satisfaction, but the riddle of life just remains unsolved. And did you come to the end of what needs to be known? No. You know the famous answer of Newton, that I got just maybe a pebble on the, and the ocean of knowledge is just there. That is also again the what we were talking in the beginning, like that demon who cannot be killed, because it is, you try to kill, it multiplies. Try to know, what happens? More questions come up. You try to solve one question and then 3 come up. It is, it goes on growing. That is why it is a never-ending thing. First, I could not understand that Sri Ramakrishna's simple statement, that I thought that probably Sri Ramakrishna was just trying to rhyme things. That jekhane gyan ache, shekhane agyano ache. That where there is knowledge, there is ignorance also. He was talking, of course, about the worldly knowledge. What does it mean that only it is, you know, and then there is many things that you don't know. You know one thing and then that only highlights what you don't know. It is. That is the end of this, the learned ignorance, that is the end of all learning. That learned ignorance. So, but this is not what is the knowledge that Lord is promising. Param Siddhi Mito Gataha. You realize the ultimate. That is the what you get through this knowledge. And he says that how it happens in the next verse. Idam Jnanam Upashritya Mama Sadharmyam Agataha Sargepi Nopajayante Pralaye Navyathanti Cha. Read the translation.
They who have devoted themselves to this knowledge have attained to unity with me, are neither born at the time of creation nor are they disturbed at the time of dissolution.
So this is how this knowledge will make you. Mama sadharmya magataha. They come to the level of oneness with God. So that is Param Siddhi. You become one with God. Just know this and you become one with God. So what can be higher than that? Nothing can be more than that. So this is what Arjuna is told, that this knowledge will bring you to that level. And then he tells now how all this creation is really the play of God. How this whole creation is just the play of God. And to tell that, he uses the human understanding, because it is to be fitted in our understanding. So how this universe comes about, that is also to be told in a way that is familiar to us. So Lord uses that imagery, that how this world comes about, This is in a seed form. This has been told in the 13th chapter, but now it is elaborated further here in the 3rd verse. Am I going too fast?
No.
Because you know we have very little time, and we have to, in a general way, at least an outline of 14 chapter we need to see in today's class, and tomorrow we have a little more time. So this is Mama Yonir Mahat Brahma, 3rd verse. Tasmin garbham dadhamyaham sambhavas sarvabhutanam tato bhavati bharata. So the familiar process of creation that is alluded to, that how you see the beings springing here, that there is this combination of sperm and ovum, and thus you see things coming up. So that example is used by Lord so that we will understand it. We understand when things come to a familiar level. So this is a familiar level to us, that we don't, when the things happen in a familiar way, we don't wonder about it. That actually it is equally wonderful. But when the things happen many times before us, when we get familiarity with it, then that question doesn't appear to us, that how it happens. We feel just satisfied that yes, there is a combination, the man principle, woman principle, they come together, and thus a life is born there. So, but how does it happen? Do we ever think about it? If this could be just considered really a miracle, if it is a unique incident, that there is no logic to it. If you look at it, there is no logical understanding of it. We say that this is my child. Parents, of course, they love to say that this is my child. Even if you grown up, my son, my daughter, claim it. This is my daughter, my son. Is it their daughter, their son? What did they really create it? Did they know? How did they make the eyes? How did they make the hair? How did they make the nose? It all happened without their knowing even the least of it. They were doing something, that also not really consciously, as if being pushed by drags. And this, in psychology, they differentiate between desire and drag. Although drag is just an intensified version of desire, drag means over which you do not have even control, not any kind of control, that gets called drag. Desire, you may exercise a little conscious control, that even if you say Nandini gets a desire to eat something, and then she thinks, because a conscientious lady, so she thinks, should I eat or should I not eat? Okay, better not eating, you know. So my grandfather had given me a nice principle, that you see, if you get this thought, should I eat or should I not eat, then don't eat.
Yeah.
Should I go for number one or number two or not, then go. That is. So his was very nice practical wisdom. So it is. So there are certain things you exercise control, but in case of drags, you find you are slave. So in that moments of slavery, you did something forced. You had no control over it. And as a result, something happened, something came up. And then you start claiming, my. Is it yours? You created it? What did you do there? Nothing. You were machines. And just as a machine doesn't have any claim. You were used as a machine. And so, really speaking, we don't understand at all that how it happens. But since we see it happening all the time, all around us, a sense of familiarity comes in. And then we understand it. It is understood only because of familiarity that, oh, things happen in this way, that's all. And nothing more. We did not understand the process at all. But because we see the things happening all around like this, we get a sense of understanding. And so Lord now uses that as example and says, so this whole creation I made in the same fashion. I also got somebody, Mama Yone Mahad Brahma, that out of me another Mahat principle came up. It is considered a female, Prakriti or Mahat, Mahat Brahma. And in that I put my seed. Now I understood that is, yeah. A familiar process. So, okay, so now I understand. So, and then from that all this sambhavas sarvabhutanam. You understand that somebody has one child, two children, four, five, but all this, everything, these millions of things came off this contact between the Purusha and Prakriti. Because of that contact, now you have all this creation going about you, and there is variety in all that. I will explain you all that variety, he says. That, but this is how all creation therefore is God, nothing but God. There is nothing else. That he says, Mama Yonir Mahat Brahma. I read the translation. Sorry, I didn't tell you to read translation for this.
My womb is the Mahat Brahma Prakriti. In that I place the germ. Thence, O Bharata, is the birth of all beings.
So see, it is all my. There are no two beings. The same being. And this is a great difference between Sankhya and Vedanta as philosophies. Sankhya, Purusha and Prakriti are two separate principles. Here, Lord says, Mama Yone. It is my own Oham. It is not somebody as wife. It's not somebody as my spouse and then we together combine and make it. There is no other. God alone is. Vedanta is very emphatic about it. And this idea you will see in sages of all different religions. If you compare the Jewish, the Christian, the Islamic, the Tao, all will tell you this, that in the beginning it is just one. There is nothing, that nothing else. The idea is now also, therefore nothing else. Now also, now are there is that there are different things. If in the beginning there is one, what is now?
One.
We'll continue to discuss it. I was given time only up to 8:25, and 8:20 is 8:20. So I have taken 5-6 minutes more. So if you have questions, maybe we can discuss a little more. But then we will take the other verses by the grace of God tomorrow. Any questions?
I don't know, it depends on whether it's a question or whether it's probably just a statement, I don't know. So if everybody realizes, then what happens then, like, you know, then there is nobody then?
Think about it, you all think about it. This is a question not just to me. This is a question that is brought up many times. What Sarvan? If everybody realizes God, then what will happen? You are all very bright people. Come on. Come with the answer. Padmanabh, what will happen? What will happen?
Swamiji, you talked about, I mean, I'm not going to answer that question, but
no?
I'm at a different lower level in terms of understanding. You talked about renunciation and getting rid of the desire. As a householder with two little kids, my biggest challenge is how do I lead a peaceful householder life, like Ramakrishna has mentioned many times, in the, and also has a path for being a better human being, be a better husband, be a better father, a neighbor, So that's where my mind is. These intellectual questions really doesn't really entice me. If you are, so I am at a lower level.
No, you are not at all at a lower level. This is the questions that you have, but the answer is here. What you say that that is the biggest challenge for you to become a good person. All that requires really, if you see, renunciation. That is where you have to give up your desires. If you want to bring up your kids as good human beings, you want to show them the ideal of unselfishness. So what you have to become?
Unselfish.
What does it mean? Giving up your desires. It is, if you see, that is what is being taught. The mundane life and spiritual life are not two different things. You have to, mundane life has problems, spiritual life has the
solutions.
The solutions proposed at the mundane level, they do not work. They are the shifting of the problems. The question is always mundane. Like you say, you want peaceful life. I tell that many times. When Swami was asked this question exactly, that I want peace, he wrote it on the board. There was a board. I want peace. Then she says, remove, rub out I, rub out want. What remains?
Peace.
So what you need to do to get peace?
Not I and want. I and want.
I wants can go.
The ego and
ego.
Want.
Ego.
They otherwise, dear, had the answer been something that could be a compromise of desires, I would be the first to take it, but it is not possible. Something that is difficult is much better than something that is impossible. To try to find a solution for these problems that you are saying without giving up desires sounds very beautiful, very tempting, but it is impossible in its nature. Giving up desires, it is difficult. Just because we do not have that understanding about it, that it is the desires that is making my life difficult and full of problems and removing all peace from my life. You will become better and better father, better and better husband, better and better a good citizen. The more you see that God is in you and in everybody else, and give up the desire about that. The world is not bad because so many people are thinking about God. It is bad because most people do not think about it. They have no time for it. It is. So just to become a good person, I am using your words, just to become good person, what you need? This wisdom.
That's what I was saying, I don't have the answer to that profound question, but my path is, you know, trying to become
So that is where you have the solution. Now you are putting it in a different word. But his question was that suppose such a great dream state comes to reality that everybody in the universe becomes fulfilled, attains perfection, become one with God, then what will happen to the world? What do you think? Your name is Lakshmi. So tell, what will happen to the whole world?
Sounds like a science fiction, I think.
Science fiction?
I would think there will be peace, and since everyone sees everyone as God, everything will become one.
She doesn't agree, let her tell. What will happen?
There is no world as we see it. Because we see the world as you, me, I, there is nothing.
Correct, very correct. Very, 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 very profound answer. Very correct answer. The question itself is meaningless. Because the moment you realize God, the world doesn't exist anymore.
Everybody doesn't exist.
That world that we were seeing doesn't exist anymore. Why do you worry? Do you worry when you find the rope that, oh, what happened to this snake? Did I kill it? So this is, this question is very natural. It comes because of our tremendous attachment, addiction, obsession with the world. We somehow feel that we will know the truth, we will find the rope, and still snake will remain. And that is why the question comes, that it is, there is no answer to it. It is, the world is not good, bad or anything. It is unreal. There is no good world. There is no bad world either. When we progress towards the truth, it is good. When we do not progress towards truth, it is bad. There is no good or bad in the world. It is unreal. So what is the point in unreal world, whether that unreal is good or bad? Do you say when a fake currency note, a fake note, when it is fake, what is the point in saying it is $20 or $100? Does it make any sense? No. Do you lose $20 or $100? Nothing, you know, it was not there at all. One husband was, he and his wife both were quite miserly. So he claimed that, today I saved $2 because instead of taking the bus, I ran after the bus. And then the wife starts scolding him. Hey, why did you not run after a taxi? You would have saved $25. So that is the world, you see. What is there good or not good about it? I liked your answer. Very intelligent answer. Very good.
Without desire, how we can improve ourselves? Like, we have some desire, then only we have like, we put a great effort to achieve like some level or whatever it is. So, without desire, like human can't improve himself.
That is perfectly true. That is very correct. That therefore, when I was telling, I said that you don't have to give up the desire for your real improvement. There are two ways in which this word is used. Improvement. What is the meaning of improvement? The word Swami Vivekananda has given a very good explanation and very inspiring. Those, it was the first time that that idea really came to me. I remember now it is about 35 or more years ago that when I was reading that part in Swamiji, that this that we all say that progress, improvement, uses the word progress there, that what is the meaning of this progress? There has to be an ideal to decide whether something is progress or regress. We have to have an ideal to decide whether something is improvement or not improvement. You have the change will be there always. Change is the law of nature. It keeps on happening. But whether that change should be called improvement or not improvement, how do you decide that? What criterion do you use for that? It is the, you have to have the ideal. So that by which you go towards the ideal, you will call an improvement. That by which you go away from it, you will call not improvement. If you don't have an ideal, there is no way to judge it. Basically, there is no improvement at all. So, to have the desire for improvement, in essence, is really the desire to reach the ideal. And what is that ideal? God is that ideal. So, therefore, Sri Ramakrishna says that desire for God realization is not to be given up. What is to be given up? Those desires which take us away from God realization. Those are the desires which are to be given up. And by giving up those desires, if you feel that you lose improvement, then that is ignorance, is it not? Improvement is that which takes us towards God. So whatever, now therefore it varies from person to person. It is not that everybody will be having the same way of giving up desires. There is a gradation. For some people, even to thieve or to tell lies is an improvement. Do you believe that?
Yes.
Mm, yes. For some people, that is an improvement. Otherwise, they are like dead mass. Tamasika. Yeah, that will come again here. Because that is the way that the person is improving. So, what is improvement depends on where a person is. You have this, say, a staircase. So, somebody is, say, on the second step, then going to third step is
improvement.
Somebody is on the fourth step, for that person coming to third step is
egress.
Yes, egress, not a progress. So, therefore, the giving up of desires could be better phrased, you can say. The same thing when phrased better, the things sound good. You know that nice story of Birbal, that king had a very pet, that parakeet, and has told that nobody should kill this parrot. Not only that, all good care should be taken of that. So the attendant was told that whosoever brings me the news that the thing is dead, cut off the head. The kings can do that, you know, those days, no inquiry, cut off the head. So, but now one day, like everything in the world, in spite of all care, that parrot died. Now, how to break the news? And the attendant was shivering with fear. So, he approached Birbal. So, he said, okay, don't worry, I will tell. And he goes to the king. Oh, your majesty. Hey, what? What news? About your parrot, you know. What happened to it? Oh, no, it's fine. Is it okay? Yes, yes. Very peaceful today. Like a great sage is not, is in perfect meditation, not making any movement. Is it? Did it eat anything? No, it seems it has given up all desires. No eating. It is probably fasting. Oh, is it? Did you check whether it is breathing? No, it is doing pranayama, perfect kumbhaka. Then why don't you say that it is dead? Well, but because I wanted myself to survive, so I didn't tell that. So, when you say it in a different way, the same thing sounds better. It is that, so instead of saying give up all desires, identify your true desire. What is your real desire? And then fulfill that desire. Concentrate all your energies in fulfillment of that one desire. And then you will see the meaning of improvement. That is, I told in the beginning that our desires, they are so conflicting. One desire conflicts with other desires. Which desire do you want to fulfill? Therefore, you see what is our real desire. In that you will see all these contradictory desires get merged. Therefore, you don't have to give up really any desire. In the world, it is not so. You have the desire to watch the movie and also the desire to go and meet a friend. Also a desire to meditate. What happens? Well, conflicting. Even if you follow one, your mind will be telling like that. So, like when somebody sits for meditation. Oh, there is a very nice program on TV going on right now. Should I meditate right now or can it be done later? Already the meditation has gone out of window. It is. And that work I have to do, finish it. Better finish it now than later. It is pending for quite some time. Before starting meditation, it never occurred to you. But as soon as you sit for meditation, that work needs to be finished. If I don't finish now, yesterday my wife scolded me. Today I say, if I don't finish, at the time of meditation it will come. I wanted to call that fellow, didn't call. Okay, should I call now or again I will forget? Let me. So many conflicting desires are creating a riot in our mind. Which one you want to fulfill? Therefore, find out the real desire. And why it is a real desire? Because all these other desires will get harmoniously synchronized in that desire. All will be fulfilled. So there is now that desire there. Hey, so let us stop now.